Welcome. On behalf of the Los Cos Outpost, the Mad River Union, and K-Hum, I'd like to welcome you to our debate featuring four of the five candidates running for Arcata City Council this time. First off, I'd like to thank our candidates for participating. As a reminder, there are three seats up this November. Jack Durham of the Mad River Union will be our glorious timekeeper, and he's going to be relentless. You'll have a minute to respond to these questions. Yeah, you want to introduce yourself, I think?
And hello, everyone. I'm Sierra Jenkins. I am a video journalist for the Lost Coast Outpost. Previously, I worked for News Channel 3, and for 2 years, Arcata was my beat. So I spent many, many nights at the Arcata City Council meeting. So I'm very blessed and excited to be here and hear what everyone has to say.
So we're going to go down the line and introduce yourselves. We'll start here with Michael Winkler.
Back in 2008, 8 years ago, I was elected to the Arcata City Council, and I made promises then, and I've kept them. We systematically rebuilt roads. We created a rail trail network, which we're going to expand on the HTA board. I expanded public transportation, and we fully staff the police. Relative to marijuana, we've had a great relationship with the dispensaries, and we use the electricity tax to drastically reduce grow houses from 1,200 to almost zero now, and we've now created the Medical Marijuana Innovation Zone. I personally have worked on Arcata House Partnership. We've helped the homeless. I've personally worked on four large solar housing projects, and we've also working towards a solution for problems with mobile home rentals. And in the energy area, that I'm the leader in bringing local energy to Humboldt County.
Right, Councilmember Susan Ornelas.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to reach out to everyone. I'm running for a third term on the Arcata City Council because I believe I've been able to approach all the positions I've been in as I've served here and working here at the City Council in a diplomatic manner. I feel like I've been able to work well with people. I've been effective. I was able to bring the public bathroom to Arcata, which was a 20-year discussion. And I was able to simplify it, just get it down to the main points and move it forward. I had the same ability, really, when I served as the HCOG chair. I was able to talk about the Bay Trail with everyone, calm everyone down politically, and move that project forward. And so I feel like I am effective in the work that I do here at the City Council, and I'm looking forward to serving for four more years.
Candidate Valerie Rose Campbell.
Hi. Most of you have never heard of me, but I've been living in the Humboldt area for the better part of 16 years, most of that here in Arcata. I've been a student, an independent working woman, a wife, a stay-at-home mom, and a working mother. I grew up in Texas, surrounded by hill country and fishing and camping on a regular basis, so when I moved to SoCal, I experienced some big culture shock, probably not unlike what our first-year students feel when they come up here to HSU. But when I first got off the Greyhound in the summer of 2000, I took a deep breath of that crisp ocean air, and I knew no matter where I ended up, Arcata would always be my home, and I would raise my children here. So here we are, a family navigating the same challenges we all share. These day-to-day challenges are shared by my children when they ask, why is that man or woman homeless? Why are they hungry? Can't we just give them what they need? And you and I know that it's more complicated than that, but I believe that Arcata knows there are some reasonable solutions to our social issues, and I would like to reflect that with my perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Mayor Paul Patino.
Hi, I'm Paul Patino. I've served one term on the Arcata City Council, 4 years, then I went back 2 years ago, served a two-year term, and now I'm looking at a four-year term to complete those things that I started in the last 2 years and making sure that they actually come to fruition here. The first thing I'm looking at or concerned with primarily is a premier destination dog park for the city of Arcata. We've got like 25 people parks and zero dog parks. It's something that it's time to have. Also, I'm working on the village-style homeless campground as a place between the bushes and an apartment, the missing link in the continuum of care. Also, I'd like to see the mobile home space rent stabilization discussion continue and us come to some sensible solution to that. And lastly, I'd like to see late night bus service Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night.
Okay, so now we're going to start with Michael Winkler with the first question. What kind of rent stabilization ordinance would you vote for, and is it needed? Are we doing enough to create affordable housing?
We're taking a unique approach in Arcata. Rather than going to a vote, what we're doing is that we're creating a dialogue, and we're going to have mediation between the mobile home owners and the park owners. And this is a process that is unique and can, unlike going to a vote for a measure, we're going to have a process and we're going to have a voluntary agreement that everyone can live with. In the unlikely case that this is not possible, I would consider mobile home rent control, but I would much rather have this mediation process working in a way that everybody can be satisfied and feel that they're being treated fairly.
Susan?
Okay, well, as people know, that City of Arcata has been having discussions about rent stabilization with the mobile homes. And so I think that that has been a really interesting and exciting endeavor, because we've been able to get into the depth of it and not just have emotional responses. So whether Arcata needs a rent stabilization ordinance, I'm not positive yet, because we're still having these conversations. So, and when it comes to affordable housing, I definitely think we need more housing on every level of housing. I think Arcata's done a pretty good job of coming up with affordable housing for the very low income with our ABC building. We have the Sandpiper development. We did the Plaza Point, which these are designed for slightly different realms of income. I think that Arcata's been working well with affordable housing. I mean, I'm open to some of the mayor's ideas of some of his ideas of camping to try to help ease people. I still need more conversation about that, though.
I'm going to focus on are we doing enough to create affordable housing, because what I see in Arcata right now is that, according to statistics at census.gov, the median household income is roughly $30,000. And when you look at 2 and 3 bedroom houses that are available within the city limits, we're looking at homes that are between $1,100 and $1,500 a month. And that doesn't match up if you need to make 3 times the rent in order to secure a home. So I think that that's an issue that we really need to look at first before we can talk about how we can incorporate rent stabilization and what kind of measures we can vote for to correct that.
You know, I started studying this mobile home rent stabilization, whether you look at an ordinance initiative or MOU or nothing, some time ago, a year and a half, maybe almost 2 years ago. I look at doing nothing at being on the far side of the spectrum, and an initiative of the people on the ballot on the other end of the spectrum. And I think that Arcata has the opportunity to land somewhere in the middle there, either as an ordinance or as an ordinance with MOU or some other creative hybrid of things. And so I'm very, hopeful that we'll be able to find that spot and we won't have to push it out to the people to an initiative that can only be changed by initiative. I'd rather have the power of changing it within the council. So, thank you.
And you, Reba?
Yeah, I should have said this off the top, but if during the course of the question you want to respond or you take issue with something someone has said, we are going to allow for a 30-second rebuttal once everyone is done speaking. So, Michael, yeah.
Okay, by far the most successful program for increasing housing in Arcata was getting rid of the grow houses. That gave us 200 available housing units that we didn't have before. And I think that Arcata House Partnership has been great. Housing First program, I want to bring cleaner and sober houses to Arcata. And I think that those things working through Arcata House Partnership can help us tremendously with affordable housing.
Should I rebut and agree? No, I'm not kidding.
Just to throw something in about affordable housing, one of the things that's going on in this town is we have increasing HSU student population, and we need to focus on how to get housing for them so that they're not renting the housing that families would be using. So I'd really like to focus on that, student housing.
Okay, we're going to move on. Are Arcata's children and seniors adequately provided for in terms of services and city resources? I'm going to start with Susan.
adequate is a level of judgment, but I would say that we have some pretty good programs for seniors. We have the Senior Lunch, which I took my mom to years ago when she lived here, and that's a wonderful event. It gets seniors together, gives them an opportunity to talk. They have neat things that you can do after that. They have exercise things, things like that. So I think that we're doing pretty good by the seniors. We also bring lunches and serve lunches to seniors at their homes if they can't come out. And then the Arcata Parks and Rec Department, which is part of the general fund and is something that, you know, is always a little scary because it can be on the chopping block during hard economic times. But we've worked really hard as a council to support it and to continue those programs so that we have some great programs for Arcata's kids. Sure, we could always keep doing more and better and keep getting better at it, and sometimes that boils down to just individuals at your home doing things for your neighborhood kids, but in general, I think we're making a good effort.
I think there are some great city resources for the children and seniors, as Susan had mentioned, for the seniors and for the children. We have Arcata Play Center, which is something that I'm very involved in, and there's a lot of Head Start programs in the community. But when it comes to services, we have to take our children and our seniors out of Arcata in order to get the eye care that they need, the dentist that they need. And some of the time, like Beret Center is the only one in the Tri-City area that takes Medi-Cal partnership. They are full, and so we have to then consider how to take our kids to Redway. And if they're full, then we have to figure out how to take our kids out of the county to get basic services for dental and eye care. And that's ridiculous. So in that respect, I don't feel like Arcata is providing enough services for our seniors and children, and I would like to see some change happen there.
I totally agree with Valerie. I think that one of the things that I noticed being a parent here was there was really no low-cost dental service. There was no dentist that would take Medicare, Medi-Cal for kids. The same occurs with the eye care. So that is something that we could really do well having here. Also, more senior affordable housing. Plaza Point was built. It filled instantly. I think we need a second and larger senior affordable housing project. And another way that we can do things for kids is continue park upgrades, especially local parks in their neighborhoods. We've got two or three more on the table that need to be rehabbed. And once we've rehabbed those, I think we can really sit back a little bit and say, all right, where do we go from here? Thank you.
One thing that I've seen in my very heavy door-to-door campaigning, which is unique among the candidates, is that as a result of getting rid of the grow houses, we have many more children than we had before. And that creates a great need for rehabbing the existing neighborhood parks. And so I'd like to see that done. As far as senior services, as other candidates have mentioned, that we need to find ways to recruit and retain medical personnel. It's a critical need for people of all ages. We need to have focus on keeping spouses happy when medical people come here, to doing loan forgiveness for people who paying off their medical debts. And we need to do an outreach to HSU students and CR students to provide these critical medical services. Because without these medical personnel, there's no way we can provide these services. So that's absolutely critical.
Okay, so moving on to the next question. Valerie Rose Campbell will start this one. And this is kind of a spinoff of what you guys were just previously talking about. What can we do about the shortage of doctors and dentists in Arcata?
I think that we should start recruiting more progressive medical professionals that don't have their families rely on the shopping experience that we provide and more prioritize the kind of scene and lifestyle that we provide. I also think we should be more progressive in the kinds of professionals that we try to recruit and recruit more women professionals. And I think we've been looking in the wrong places if we're not able to keep people up here. Because bottom line, if my doctor is really into shopping at Nordstrom's, I'm going to think less of their opinion of them when they give me pharmaceuticals to take into my body. Like I want them to have the same kind of culture lifestyle that I do so that I can trust them in what they're trying to provide for me and my family.
Thank you. Paul?
Great. Thanks, Valerie. New person, new ideas. I really like that. And just to kind of piggyback on what she said the other day, I was talking to somebody and they said, you know what we can do to bring doctors and nurses here? And I said, well, number one, HSU reinstates the nursing program. I'd hate to be a doctor coming here and the university doesn't have a nursing program. It's not attractive to somebody looking for help in the emergency room or whatever part of the hospital they're working. But the thing out of the box that came to me was, why don't we look at Syrian medical personnel? Let's get Syrian refugee medical personnel here. It sounds like a crazy idea. I don't know how impossible that would be, but it's a thought, and it's the first new idea that's come to me in a long time.
Thank you, Paul. Michael?
My partner works in the medical field, and so she and I frequently discuss the issue of situation with medical providers that we need to make it so this area is more attracted to spouses of medical providers and help orient them when they get here, do a loan forgiveness so it's not overwhelmingly expensive. And we, as I said, we need an outreach to potential medical personnel from current HSU and NCR students. And I personally talked to the president of HSU about the possibility of upgrading nursing students to be able to get bachelor's of science degrees. And she said that CSU is going ahead with that, and she's going to work with them to make sure that those students get to the professional bachelor's of science level.
Susan?
Certainly, I do appreciate the kind of loan forgiveness that they do for rural regions, and we should maximize that as much as possible. I feel like the city could probably take this on and even sort of, you know, market itself. It's something I've been working on for the last 8 years of help having the city market itself in various realms, and I think this is something that we could possibly work at. And then I just want to mention something. This is maybe out there with the Syrian doctors that we want, you know. But it's something that I've been aware of, that in Israel they do medical marijuana research. And I think that it's something we should look into here. We have the interdisciplinary studies up at HSU about medical marijuana. And we are a region where those genetics have been formed, and it makes some sense. I mean, we'd have to pursue it, and I understand there's federal regulations around that, which can be difficult, but that could stir up some medical interest in this region, possibly, and attract people to our area.
We got a question from the audience concerning upgrades at the wastewater treatment plant. I'm going to wrap it into a question we had before us. Do you have any thoughts about Arcata moving away from its model of wastewater treatment ponds to more mechanical forms of treatment? I believe we're starting with Paul on this question.
Sure. Thank you. We've met and talked with our professional engineering people, consultants, and everyone that's involved in this, and listen to their perspective on what we should do. And I don't think we've landed exactly on what we want to do. It does appear like, especially from the public and from the two styles of engineering, that some sort of a hybrid that's carefully laid out, that's not all concrete, it stays with our marsh system, but maybe have some backup in a, I think they call it oxidation ditch system that would help us for peak times. So I think that we need to be cautious in our approach and not lose the marsh system and style, and maybe back it up a little bit.
The father of the Arcata Marsh Waste Treatment System is here in the audience, Professor Bob Gearhart, who's an expert, someone who I have tremendous trust in. And I think that this is a unique system that we have here in Arcata, and that we can meet all standards and still retain the unique and world-renowned system that we have here, that we've had multiple hearings on this. Councilmember Arnalis and I are two council members who have backgrounds in environmental resources engineering, so I think that this is something that she and I have an understanding in a technical sense that I think is very helpful in being able to come up with solutions for this that keep this the state of the art and meet all current and future federal and state standards.
So, of course, we value the marsh system. It has so many values for us as a community above and beyond wastewater treatment. It's social and environmental, and it's something we've got Godwit days and all these different things around it. We're faced with a situation where we need to meet water quality standards, and we also have a a challenge in that there's sea level rise coming up. And then there's our marsh system right there by the bay. So we have a lot of things to consider. This is actually one of the reasons that I feel like I'm good for this next 4 years, just partly for this, because it's probably one of the most expensive endeavors we'll get into in the next 4 years. And my training is as a water quality engineer. And so I do understand when people are talking about it, and you know, I know what they're talking about. I certainly love the Arcata Marsh and intend to work with that system. And also, I understand we need to meet water quality standards.
I'm not going to pretend to know as much as they do about this issue because they've been working with this issue for much longer than I have. But I would like to point out that every upgrade Arcata has to face is an opportunity to become a leader in an environmentally stable and socially acceptable solution. Whether it's the bathroom upgrades at D Street Community Center or it's the city's wastewater program, those things have a great opportunity for us to become leaders in the environmental world.
We're talking about environmental things here. Are you satisfied with Arcata's sustainable forestry policy? And that's to you, Michael.
Arcata, once again, is a world leader in city-owned sustainable forestry. That Director of Environmental Services, Mark Andre, is on the State Forestry Board as an expert. That we've taken what was a clear-cut area 50 years ago and increasingly turned it into a forest that in a series of forests that have the characteristics of an old-growth forest. We've acquired hundreds of acres of additional forest land while I've been on the city council. We do selective logging. We're Forest Stewardship Council certified, and we're a world leader, and we're experts in sustainability. We have an outstanding forestry committee that serves the city. So I'm extremely satisfied, and I think it's something we can be extremely proud of here in Arcata.
Well, okay, my short answer is yes. I really believe that the city of Arcata has a broad intent with the forest. Probably our deepest management is for water quality and for soil quality. And then we harvest the wood, which makes sense to us because we use wood. And I was really pleased, actually. I was buying a gift for someone, and it was a bench, like a little outdoor bench with a picnic bench. And it was made with Arcata's certified wood. And it wasn't even that expensive. So that was like very pleasing on multiple levels. So yes, I'm really proud that the city of Arcata had the vision to have a community forest. It's something that's heralded around the nation these days, community forests in general. And Arcata is a leader, and Mark Andre's been a wonderful example for us in that. Another thing I just want to give some kudos to in this is all the volunteers who work in the forest have been just amazing.
I understand that there are people on both sides of the issue of selective logging, and it's hard to know what's best for our community without all of the information that has been provided to these people. But I do see that our community forests are, they're usable, but they're missing a few things. They're missing permanent bike, mountain bike trails, and they are missing some connections to the other forests, of course. So this is something that I would like to look into more.
I agree with everything everybody said. And I'd like to say that we have a great sustainable forestry program here. And one thing I'd like us to point to in the future is possibly a small biomass energy producer, small 5 or 10 kW. I've looked at a program where you would do that locally and produce your own energy. And we have the biomass, and possibly partnering with Humboldt State University, we might have enough population to actually use the energy coming out of a biomass energy producer. They're self-sustaining, self-contained units that are generally come from Northern Europe. And it'd be great to see us pioneer that and use our own forests to create our own energy and sell it to CCE when they want it.
rebuttals?
I currently serve on the Redwood Coast Energy Authority, so we are putting together the community choice. It's called aggregation still. We haven't legally quite called it energy yet. And there is certainly a discussion of biomass, and it's an important energy source for us in this region because of our forestry industry. But I just have to rebut the Paul's thought there in that I don't see us putting in a new biomass system. There's already some biomass established here.
Yeah, I'd just like to say this would be a long-term project. They're not cheap, and it would take a while for us to make the agreements and plan where we would locate a small unit and how many people it would handle. And we certainly have the biomass for that.
Well, as the a member of the Technical Advisory Committee for Redwood Coast Energy Authority on the Community Choice Energy, that biomass is a critical element in having a balanced energy system. Long term, we need to have solar, we need to have wind, and we need to have biomass, and that will create jobs and economic activity in this county rather than having money going out for that we're paying for outside energy.
Okay, thank you. I want to move to the plaza. As we know, Halloween is coming up, and in the last few years, on both Halloween and New Year's Eve, the Arcata Police Department has had a pretty strong presence on the plaza. So just shortly, is Arcata's Halloween and New Year's Eve plaza enforcement appropriate? Susan?
Well, it was appropriate for a few years when we really had some problems. People got a little too, they just went too crazy. And so we had to show that, no, we enjoy fun in Arcata. We enjoy a good time. We don't want people being stabbed with needles and bottles broken and people climbing and breaking things. And there was just a lot of mayhem that went on. So I've been supportive of the police, of our chief's take on it, and that he wanted to show there is some control. And yet, along with that, I've been working with him really diligently to let's lighten that up. We don't want a reputation of that's the way we manage our plaza. That's not the intent. But the intent was to show, no, you can't do that on the plaza. We are serious about that. We love our plaza.
Thanks. Valerie?
That was a rough year when all of that happened on the plaza. I was shocked. When I read the headlines and I went down and I saw it for myself, it was really unbelievable. So at that time, the police presence was appropriate. Is it appropriate now? I'm not totally sure. I don't know what the tone of the party crowd is on Halloween this year, but I do know that we are lacking in a unity of 21 and over activities in general for these holiday activities. And if we had more unity in activities that were happening that weren't just the bar scene, we could try to control the crowds a little bit better with those activities.
Paul?
I tend to agree with Susan. I think the, and Valerie, I think that the years that things got out of hand created the reaction of the police to add the lights and the command vehicle and all that. But what I found the last couple of years is the lights tend to put a spotlight out to act up in. And so I think in some ways it works in reverse. If you got it too well lit and too special, then people tend to migrate to act up in that area. And so I think we need to tone it down a little bit and actually have a discussion on what should we do for the plaza for Halloween and New Year's. And they're two distinct times. Students are usually not here for New Year's, and Halloween they are. So they're different crowds.
Michael?
That one year, the crowd was out of control. That it was necessary for the police to exert what might otherwise be regarded as a heavy-handed control under those circumstances. I think now it's more appropriate for them to back up. But nationwide, we have a situation of a breakdown of trust between the public and the police. So we need to make sure that that doesn't happen in Arcata, and more outreach in community policing. And I think we might at some point even need to consider body cams to be carried by the police, because we need to have that level of trust. We need to have the public feel that the police are public servants and are not a military force occupying Arcata. And I think that's really critical, is to build on the trust we already have and to increase that over time and have that communication between the public and the police during holidays and at all other times.
Since Michael brought it up, I love the body cam idea, and especially when somebody's out of their car. In the car, you got the dash cam. When you're out of the car, you're the bike cop, or you're walking, or you're patrolling, especially like Halloween or sometime where we might have a few people patrolling. I think the body cam is real appropriate today for officers that are not in a vehicle. So I really support that.
Anyone else? Okay, so keeping it on the plaza, why are there signs out on the plaza saying you can't have a dog or smoke or drink when people do these things out there all the time? When laws are irrelevant, doesn't that just breed disregard for other law? Susan?
That's an interesting question. There are laws out on the plaza because over the course of time, they've sort of proven themselves to be needed. So people were abusing smoking or people were abusing dogs. I mean, currently what goes on out in the plaza, people have found ways of getting around dogs with service dog excuses and thoughts, and it's difficult to judge what is a service dog or not. And then we only have so many police people, and it's difficult. I mean, you know, even the city manager and I were just walking by the other day, and we saw some people smoking. We actually said to ourselves, you know, like, should we say something to them, or is it meaningful? And so it's just, you know, humans with our you know, addictions and things. And I feel like we try to do the best. I do feel like it's important to have laws out there. You know, dogs at the farmer's market are, if you just even just think about it for a minute, it's critical because dogs pee on piles of things and stuff. So you have to just, that's one reason for that. And
I prefer that there not be dog feces on the plaza. I prefer that there not be smoking on the plaza. But in regards to smoking on the plaza, it's kind of unreasonable to expect that when there's a row of bars that are right in front of there, since drinking and smoking tend to go hand in hand for a lot of people. So there needs to be some other kind of solution to resolve the smoking issue and the waste that that creates around the plaza. If there was a better place to take our dogs, then I think we would see less dogs on the plaza. And basically, if there's another place for these activities, then I think it would siphon it away from the plaza, whatever the activities were.
Yeah, I spend time on the plaza generally each week, and what I find is we have signs. They don't seem to function. They're busy. They're not appropriately placed. When I talk to people, I tell them, hey, you know, we don't smoke here. And if you want to smoke in this area, you have to be walking. And I give them the whole no open container rule and all that. And they say, well, where's the signs? And, you know, I think we need different signs, written differently, trying to remind people, this is a safe place for kids. And the community to play in. And so we don't smoke and drink and bring animals that we can, that we don't have to bring with us. So I think some gentle communication done by someone other than a police person would really help, along with new signs.
You know, we have these laws for a reason, that you know, dogs can be a health hazard and either biting or waste. And the main reason we have for smoking is that smoking is a health hazard to bystanders and people who aren't smoking. And this is something that we've had to fine-tune on the Arcata Plaza. Having restriction does give the police a tool to move people away from people who shouldn't be exposed to smoking. We don't exist in a vacuum. We have a regulation banning dogs on the plaza, but we've had court rulings saying that if somebody is declared that a dog is a service dog, then we have to allow it. So we have to adjust the situation that we have and the enforcement of laws to comply with federal standards. But we do need these laws, and we have to apply them as the police can in order to keep other people safe and to minimize the impact that some people on the plaza have on other people.
Okay. Staying on the plaza, and this is kind of a broad question, so I hope you'll get philosophical about it, but is the plaza as good as it's going to get? I think we're starting with Valerie.
I sure hope not. When I was here 16 years ago, when I first was hanging out on the plaza, it didn't feel like it does now. There was still, you know, hints of smoking and, you know, people walking their dogs around there, but it wasn't like how it is nowadays, where I have to walk my kids across the street because I'm seeing drug use on one of the corners and trying to get them away from that or that unsafe situation. So I definitely don't agree that this is as good as the plaza's going to get.
Like Valerie, I hope it's not. And that's one of the reasons that I spend time there. There are some things that I think we could approach, look at, maybe banning single can sales of alcohol in the plaza area. That might help a little bit. I also would like to look at banning sales of filtered cigarettes in Arcata. One of the things that I find as I clean up the plaza is cigarette butts galore. I mean, by the thousands every day. And they go down the drain, into our bay, fish eat them, you know, all the negative things that could come about. I think that a carefully written ordinance to ban filtered cigarette sales would clean it up, and the single can ban of selling single cans of alcohol would help the population.
We have a community group called the Community Pride and Peace Group. And I would like to work with them to make them more effective in order to make the plaza a place where people feel safe and comfortable. One thing that has been done at some times over the years is what we've called reoccupy the plaza. And that's for having more activities such as picnics at other times during the year than just on weekends with farmers market. And I think working on that and getting people other than just the people currently occupying the plaza to use the plaza more regularly could be an important step also. And the downtown business group, Arcata Main Street, can also play an important role in making the plaza a place that's more comfortable for people to be.
I've lived in Humboldt County for 40 years, and people have talked about the plaza for those 40 years and probably before that, but that's when I started hearing it. And so I'd say what we see on the plaza today, I think that the drug use has gotten worse. I think that the drug choices have gotten worse. There's more methamphetamine, there's more heroin. Opiate addiction is a huge problem for every city in the United States. And so I'd say that we are seeing a level of some of that activity stronger on the plaza and in other places around Arcata. That's terrible, and we have to absolutely address that. I mean, besides that, I think that the plaza, it was interesting. I was just at Indigenous Peoples Day on Monday, and which was a lovely, simple ceremony. And they talked about the violence that occurred to their people there 150, 160 years ago. And I couldn't help but the back of my mind think that possibly with this kind of violent beginning, it's caused problems for this piece of land. So I hope this is the beginning of a healing.
I would like to add, you know, Susan brought up a good point about the kinds of drug use that's going on the plaza. When I did my ride-along last weekend, I talked about that with the officer I was partnered with, and we talked about the solutions for rehabs in the area, and there aren't any. There's one place in Eureka, and that's about it. So if we want to see the drug problem get cleaned up on the plaza, then we need to provide those services here in Arcata.
Yeah, something that we've noticed over the last 5 years, and it's peaked, actually peaked this year, is the trimmigration. People that come here for vacation and trimming. And if you talk to the community that's on the plaza recently over the last few months because of the season, they're from Europe, they're from South America, they're from Mexico, Canada. And I think we need to look at how can we help them in a social way, kind of educate them while they're here. And also, I'd like to see a play structure for kids on the plaza.
I also have been paying attention to the Trimigant situation, and personally, I don't find that to be as huge of a problem as the more diehard drug problem that we have. I think that is a worse problem, and I'd like to agree, some kind of play structure. And actually, I've been sort of thinking maybe something that's, like a pop-up.
Well, clearly the war on drugs has failed as a society, that we've spent a tremendous amount of money incarcerating drug users. So I think that working through the League of California Cities that we're a member of to get money that's currently going to imprisoning people related to drug use and diverting more of that to use for treatment and getting money in this community for local treatment, I think is an important aspect in order to deal with the severe hard drug problem that we have in this community and throughout California.
Now I'm going to combine these two questions, both revolving around homeless in the community. How do you think Arcata can best address homeless in the community? And also, there are many chronically homeless people living in Arcata who would like some form of housing, whether it be transitional or permanent, but the availability of such housing is extremely short supply, and funding to build affordable housing is also very limited. To help address this problem, would you support making available a city-owned parcel on which could be built a small village of 20 to 30 small detached bedroom dwellings, a communal kitchen and a dining area, and communal toilets and shower facilities? Once again, it says support making a city-owned parcel available for this village. This person says the per-unit cost for such a development would be much less than the per-unit cost for an apartment complex with the same number of units. So once again, both how Arcata can best address the homeless and would you support a city-owned parcel to build a small village of 20 to 30 small bedroom dwellings? Okay, Paul.
Yeah. Of course, I support that. I've studied Opportunity Village Eugene, and some time back, some years ago, 2007, I went to Dignity Village in Portland, and there are models of campground-style housing, self-sustaining, self-governed, and generally on public property, usually run 30 people or less. I really support that. I'd like to see Arcata step out and be the leader in doing that. And as we hopefully are successful with that, the county and other cities can have their own campgrounds. When we look around, we say Arcata has 100 or so homeless people, or some people say 200. You know, it's not going to take care of everybody at once. But building one campground at a time and using it as a place that, again, is between the bushes and the apartment.
My partner works in the homeless services field, so homeless issues are something that I discuss with her frequently. Also, I've been the liaison to our Cater House partnership, and so that has given me a lot of exposure to people involved in these issues. I've been friendly with Fox Olson, former executive director of our Cater House partnership, for a long time. She said that homeless campground is poor quality housing, so that's something I would be reluctant to support. Some things I would support are something that exists in Eureka are called clean and sober houses, which are they're group houses that people can live in who previously were homeless in many cases. Apartments First, which is another program of our Arcata House Partnership, to be able to house people who are able to control their behavior even if they're still on alcohol or drugs. And finally, transitional housing. I guess that wasn't finally. I work in the affordable housing field. I have personally been the energy analyst for many projects, and I will continue to work with Danco, who has employed me in Arcata as a volunteer to work on these projects to avoid conflicts of interest.
Okay, so the best way to address the homelessness. Well, this partly goes back to what we were talking about earlier, just sort of mental health issues. That's a fundamental problem that's going on. So we are making efforts to work with the county and their MIST program to reach out and have better communication about that. I do think the city of Arcata has tried. We've done the ABC building. We have the Arcata House that does Apartments First and things like that. So we've really tried to get people housed. As far as supporting the small houses kind of village, hearing the discussion about that was interesting. It one thing I felt I noticed about the difference in the small houses style as opposed to, say, the city of Eureka's, what is that called? It's not their MIST. It's that big development that they have over there by Target. Is there was more nature in the small houses one. So whether it should be city-owned, I slightly question that. I feel like a nonprofit could probably move, be a lot more wily. Once you get a city-owned things, it becomes more burdensome, bureaucratic. But I think we do have a housing issue for sure, and it's something we need to address on multiple levels.
I feel like Arcata has a lot of pride in being an inclusive community, and so when people talk about doing a tiny village, they get a little scared about having, you know, increased crime or, you know, what they think that would bring. And I think one of the reasons that they're afraid of that is because of the Arcata Bay Crossing, which is a great idea. And I love this idea of the, what happened with Arcata Bay Crossing, but a lot of families in that area are complaining about crime in that area that isn't being controlled as well. So I think that there wasn't enough services to support that project. And if we do a tiny home village, we need to make sure that there are enough services to support that project here in Arcata, not somebody coming from Eureka, not somebody coming from some other part of the county, but they need to be here locally. I also want to point out that, you know, when we talk about these things, we forget about the youth homeless. There aren't really any youth shelters around here anymore, and there is a big gap in the foster youth community where there's like 300 foster youth out there in Humboldt County, and there's only like 100 or so beds. So that could potentially be part of this topic as well.
As far as alternative approaches such as Tiny House Village or Homeless Campground Opportunity Village, that one thing that I think is definitely true is that the city of Arcata is not in a position to provide housing. And what we can do is to work with nonprofits who might be pursuing some of these alternative approaches and to make sure that it complies with city regulations and adjust those regulations if necessary to deal with some of these more creative and innovative solutions.
Susan?
I just want to bring up the point that there are Humboldt State University students that are homeless. And so I do feel like that's something that I would like to work with Humboldt State to address, because I'm not the first person who's heard about students living in cars, and I've heard about that for years, but I think it's increased. And so it might be something that would be nice to move forward working with Humboldt State about.
I just wanted to make it clear that when we talk about a village-style campground, it's a different animal than ABC or any kind of provider-run place. It's self-governed, self-sustaining, and you have a different population because they have to work with each other and they don't get to stay there. And it needs to be on public land because it won't be cheap otherwise. And it's not permanently, but it can be leased there. Thank you.
Okay. Paul.
So and onto cannabis. Do you support the medical marijuana innovation zone and Arcata's cannabis policies in general? We're going to start with Michael.
Marijuana issues are something that I've been involved in many years, going back about 10 years to when I was on the Planning Commission. That what we need to do is to help move this industry from being an underground outlaw industry to being a normal regulated business. I feel that medical marijuana innovation zone is something that very much moves the industry into this type of regulated model. At the same time that maintaining a strong positive relationship with the medical marijuana dispensaries, but at the same time we need to keep the electricity tax in effect and keep the growing out of houses and apartments. Back in 1933, when alcohol was legalized, keeping taxes down, and there was a five-year period where we evolved alcohol to being legal, and now we can do the same thing with marijuana, make it a legal industry and one that we can be proud of and rather than being criminal.
Yes, I do support the MMIZ zone because, as Councilmember Winkler just said, we are taking this industry from being a black market into the regulated industry. And we had a lot of conversations about, you know, what does the state have on their MRSA and the way that they laid things out. And we tried to line things up as best aligned with the state as possible so we would be ready to move into the state rules. So I think that Arcata was really just rational and reasonable about the way they approached the medical marijuana rules. I think that we had a lot of conversations about the dispensaries like 8 years ago, 10 years ago, and I think that has worked out really well. We have a good working dispensaries. The high energy use electricity tax was also very beneficial for neighborhoods. It returned housing back to people, and that was a good use. So I think Arcata's marijuana discussions and ordinances that we've come up with have been thoughtful, reasonable, and we'll see if they're effective.
I think the innovation zone is a great idea, but it poses a huge safety risk, especially for from the perspective of the families that have their children go to the Head Start that's nearby that isn't considered a school, so it doesn't adhere to the same regulation of the 1,000-foot zone. So I think that there's still discussion on how to make everybody happy in that area that still needs to be made. In regards to the city's cannabis policy, I think that this is an opportunity, especially with legalization around the corner, for Arcata to become a leader in this, in the policies throughout the state. I felt like we had a chance to become leaders 8-10 years ago when we were zoning them, and it was a different climate. There was a lot of fears, and I don't want to see this opportunity be squandered by the city this time.
Yeah, our MMIZ that we all support is growing and developing, and as we speak, people are getting permits and starting businesses there. And I think that we'll be able to adjust the regulations and the zoning as the business develops. It's a big area. It has a lot of potential. And one of the things, speaking about security, because it's fairly contained and because the people that are in business there are concerned about security, I think that it will in the future be a really great location to do business because it'll be secure and clean, and also, you know, there's not retail activity going there, so it's trucks and wholesale, not individuals buying like they would at a normal dispensary. So I think it's great, and I'm glad we have it.
We're running out of time, so I want to move into the next section of our debate. Our friends, I should say, at the Mad River Union are really the brains behind putting this all together and setting this up. So I want to thank Jack again for doing this. And he has decided, and the Mad River Union has decided in all their wisdom, that you should all be subjected to a lightning round. So this next next series of questions, you will all have 10 seconds to respond. And it might get weird.
Straight down the line. Yes or no, and only one sentence to explain why.
So right up top, McKinley statue, keep or move? Michael.
Keep tradition and avoid conflict between people who want it and people who don't want it.
That was a little long. So, Susan.
I want that conversation, and I'd like to move it off to the corner on the plaza.
Okay, Valerie.
I don't think this is a priority to decide whether it stays or goes.
Yes, move it, and if nobody really wants it, we can keep it on one corner of the plaza and put on the opposite corner a WIAT person.
Okay, next question. Do you support community water fluoridation? Susan.
I support more conversation around this, and my friends who have encouraged me to move fluoride things forward, I'm open to more conversation and more expertise.
Fluoride in the water? No, thank you.
No fluoride in the water, and if you really look into it, you wouldn't drink water with fluoride in it. Thank you.
Keep it, and the city council can't change it without another ballot measure.
The Paumea flag at City Hall, is it time to take it down? Let's start with Valerie. POWMI.
Not a priority, I don't feel.
Okay. No. Paul.
I agree, not a priority. I'm not a real flag person, so it doesn't mean much to me, thank you.
Okay. Michael.
Keep it, it's a political third rail.
Okay. Susan.
I'd keep it.
Here we go with not a priority, but is a tomato a fruit or a vegetable?
I should answer that one, Paul.
I didn't hear the question.
I should know that, but I think it's a fruit, you know?
It is a fruit.
It's a fruit.
It's delicious.
Okay. Will you commit to using the terms in a jiffy and out of sight more often, Michael?
No.
Absolutely. In a jiffy. Okay.
In a jiffy, I can get behind. I'm not sure I could use the other one.
You know, as somebody 30, 40 years ago, I said out of sight a lot, but not in a jiffy.
Okay.
Literally out of sight.
Okay, should Arcata City Council members tell the truth?
Yes, as much as any human can always tell the truth.
Truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes, microscopically.
Yes, always and everywhere.
We asked our readers at Loco to comment, and this was the number one question they asked of you guys. Who are you voting for president? Valerie.
Oh, me first. I'm not voting for Trump. I wish I could vote for Hillary, but I'm a Green Party member, and I think I'm going to have to vote for Jill Stein.
I'm going to vote for the best candidate, Jill Stein.
Clinton is the only realistic choice under the circumstances.
I'm voting for Hillary Clinton.
And that is our time. So I want to thank all you guys for participating. And I want to thank our audience for coming out and caring about democracy. And thank you so much.
Thank you.